Okay, great. Well, my name is Tyler. I'm from the New School. I'm probably the only sociologist in this room here, so I'll try to keep my concepts as general and as understandable as possible. But there's been a lot of talk in the U.S. about the decline of social capital and the social isolation that's been coming out because of economic forces, political forces, and whatnot. So as soon as this new social network came out, Twitter, all of a sudden academics, journalists were up in arms about, you know, oh, can we use this for something more? Can we use this to bridge some of the problems that we're having in terms of capital isolation, social isolation? So a lot of academics, especially in my program, especially in sociology, thought about, okay, well, what can we do? How can we approach the study of Twitter, essentially, without focusing on issues like petty politics or, you know, the minutiae of all the content that's out there? So we decided to basically look at it from two directions. We have what's happening on the networks itself as information, as content, but then also the social motivations behind it. And we were really focused on the latter. So now, how many people here are familiar with how Twitter works? Okay, good. So basically you understand that it's a directed social network. So you can choose to follow someone and they don't have to follow you. So what makes this different from Facebook is that we can actually see the number of followers that an individual has. These are active, you know, I choose to follow this person because I have some sort of value that I invest in this individual. So we decided to define followers as a way to look at social capital, a way to look at the sort of value that's embodied in people's relationships. So looking specifically at the content, our first step was to look and see how does activity and content affect the distribution of users' networks. So we wanted to find out, you know, do networks increase in size as people gain more followers or choose to follow more people? So our first hypothesis was to look at that dimension. And then the second hypothesis was to see what exactly is the content on there? What are the types of discussions people are having? So that was a bit more difficult, and we had to devise all sorts of computational schemes to be able to get that data. And then once we had the understanding of what's going on in these networks, we wanted to figure out, okay, what's the social rationale behind this? Is there some reason for people gaining more followers or gaining more following counts besides specifically, you know, I want more followers? So we first hypothesized that, you know, an increase in followers has to do with something of immediate marginal utility to someone. So I find a value in the content of what they have to say, and then I choose to follow them. So that was our first hypothesis on the social rationale dimension. Now, in order to do this, we had to do two separate studies. The first study was to take a massive corpus of all this Twitter data. So we monitored all the tweets for 1 week. We monitored a selection of them. It's actually about 20 million tweets per day. So we just took a small fraction of that. And then we ran all of those tweets through a semantic learning system to sort of categorize so-and-so is talking about business, so-and-so is talking about, you know, human interest and finance and whatnot. So after we got all that data, then we could actually look at it quantitatively and see what was going on. So, but that only gave us half of the picture. So the next step was to actually go out and find some of these prolific Twitter users in New York City, in San Francisco, and see what was their personal rationale? What did they believe was the reason that they would engage with this content? So the first part of our quantitative analysis was to see how individuals over time gain followers versus their following count. So this is a ratio of the out degree to the in degree. So at the beginning of someone's Twitter life, when they haven't tweeted a whole lot, when they haven't sent a whole lot of messages out there, they're following a greater number of people than are following them, which would make sense. But it follows almost a great curve until it reaches about, 20,000 tweets, and then it starts to vary really greatly. So what this told us was that followership increases with activity. And as more and more individuals became more inactive, they became more and more involved with what was going on. So then our next major question was, well, what's happening with the content on Twitter? Is it distributed, in one way or another by different categories? So we took a small sample of that data, about maybe a little bit less than 100,000 tweets, maybe about 50,000. And then decided, okay, let's look at all these means and all these figures. And we found out, okay, people who talk about business and finance stuff generally have a larger network than most people. But for the rest of the categories, it's not very small deviations. I mean, it's not huge deviations from each other, despite the fact that, people are talking about human interest and entertainment and culture and technology, way more than other categories. They still have similar sized networks to each other. So we thought, okay, if the network content doesn't really matter in terms of people gaining followers, in terms of people gaining following count, what's going on here? So we went back and we interviewed a lot of the people who were major prolific users. And I'll summarize basically what they were telling us is that you start to dichotomize the exchange value of information versus the use value of information. And the people who are able to do this dichotomization well, who are able to isolate, the social value of what their information object was from their use value of, this is of marginal utility to me because I'm able to, use it for some purpose. These were the people who were able to successfully engage with Twitter and successfully engage with gaining lots of other followers. So based on this assumption, we were able to go back and just look at our initial conclusions and say, okay, yeah, networks increase in size exponentially with, followers. That's true. Increased activity does lead to a larger network. That makes sense. But the content itself doesn't seem to have an effect on the amount of people that an individual follow. Aside from business and finance, all the other categories have small deviations. But our most interesting conclusion, and I think the one that's most relevant for our talk on information today, is that the social value of information on Twitter, it seems to trump all other possible uses that you could have for it. So if somebody gives you an object of information on Twitter, it's so valuable, not necessarily because you're able to do something with it, but because it's seen in context. It has a dichotomization feature to it. So where we go from here, I think, is really interesting, because what we see in the psychology of what Twitter users are doing is we start to see a divide between different sort of uses of information, where the two seem to be combined in networks like Facebook or LinkedIn or anything that has a non-directional social network. So that's basically what we were looking at, and I think this is a great starting point for bringing in other people to the discussion.